It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt.
Hello, Amanda. It's nice to be here with you again.
It is great to be back. We've got a great show today.
Nothing like a warm day, huh?
It's a little toasty in Oklahoma, which is where we're broadcasting from. We're both of OK Safe, and we would like to direct your attention to our website, which is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. SAFE stands for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise, which is what we focus our efforts on. We're a state of Oklahoma-based organization, but often we talk about subjects that are of interest to all 50 states.
Yeah, and this subject today ought to be of interest to the whole globe.
It will be, and it's one that's really hitting home because it does involve our governors, but it also involves some activities that are bringing us into a deeper interdependency with the Chinese, and we've got a great guest. On our website, which I'm happy to report, Don, is functioning once again because we changed servers, and you know what happens when you do that with technology, what happens?
There's never a moment of boredom when you do stuff like that, is there?
There was a lot of knuckle, fingernail biting, but OK Safe's website is back up and running again with a new host. A lot of good information there, whether it's from on the Real ID Act, the Fusion Centers.
Trans-Texas Corridor,
but the issue that we're addressing mostly in 2011 has been the Health Care Reform Act and the activities, the pushback in the state of Oklahoma against the establishment of a health insurance exchange.
Exactly.
And we also have an action item. We'd like to draw the attention to the OK Safe blog, which is on, there's a link there that can take you to oksafe.wordpress.com. A lot of recent posts, one of which has to do with a woman who is going to fight the implementation of the Real ID, the collection of biometrics. She did not renew her Oklahoma driver's license due to the fact that we collect too many biometric information, that data. And so she's intentionally let her driver's license expire after exhausting all other legal remedies,
right,
recourse, and actions over a period of several years. So finally, it's going to be brought to court, and some attorneys have picked up the case.
Well, she's been my hero for a long time for a whole bunch of reasons, and now she's really my hero. I can't believe what she's putting herself through for our benefit right now.
There's a link there if you want to contribute to the K Beach Defense Fund. So go to the OK Safe blog, and right below that is a post on how God helped help you find. You look for one thing on the State Department website and you find another one, and this another one was a biggie. A memorandum of understanding, which is a contract, has been signed by the mayor of San Diego and the San Diego Gas and Electric Company with Belgorod. Ask me where Belgorod is.
Where's Belgorod?
It's in the Russian Federation. For the development of a smart grid partnership.
And involvement with the smart grid product itself.
With the smart meters,
yep,
those intrusive meters on your head. Now, a lot of people, if you go to the mayor, Jerry Sanders, website, there's no announcement about the signing of this memorandum in May.
I wonder if he just didn't notice that he had signed it.
He signed it, and the officials in Belgorod, I had to look up where's Belgorod. Belgorod truly is in the southeast portion of the Russian Federation. So that's the Russian Federation, and they're mentioned, by the way, the Russian Federation is mentioned in the Memorandum of Understanding. So that's on our website.
Yeah.
If you have friends in San Diego, anywhere in California, you need to send them that blog post and ask them to start challenging the mayor's actions there.
That's potentially very, very troublesome.
It is. You do not want to become that interdependent. The other thing, we have an action item on, and this ties into our guest, who is a very special guest, is Professor William Kaufman. The other action item is that we're asking all citizens to call their governor in their state and challenge their participation in the upcoming National Governors Association. It's a U.S.-China Governors Forum, which is to take place in Salt Lake City, Utah, in the middle of July of this year, 2011, where the governors are to be paired up one-on-one in peer-to-peer exchanges with a Chinese party official counterpart, whether it's a provincial leader or a governor, for purposes of trade development, education, cultural exchanges, health care issues, and technology. So it's an important one to protest. It's an important one to take action on. The toll-free number for Governor Mary Fallon in Oklahoma is 1-800-865-5853. And I'll repeat that. The toll-free number for Republican Governor Mary Fallon in the state of Oklahoma is 1-800-865-5853. And please ask her what her intentions are. Now that, Don, leads us up to our guest speaker, who is Professor Bill Kaufman. And Professor Kaufman is a tenured professor, was a tenured professor with the University of Michigan. He's retired. His department was aerospace engineering at the University of Michigan. He was the president of Explosion Research and Investigation Corporation. And he was established in this university, highly regarded, and conducted this class and began to question the University of Michigan's deepening involvement with communist China. And when he started to question their involvement, lo and behold, Professor Kaufman was retired.
Yeah, they instead of shedding light and having people clean up their act, as it were, they decided to clean him up instead.
They removed Professor Kaufman. And it's our pleasure to bring in Professor William Kaufman of the University of Michigan. Are you there?
Good afternoon. Glad to speak with you in the chat.
Dr. Kaufman, it's a delight to meet you by phone.
All right. We are very delighted that you're here, and we had kind of a long introduction, so we're going to get right into it. Please explain, tell us about yourself and your position at the University of Michigan and the courses you taught.
Well, I arrived at the University of Michigan along with my wife in 65. It was one of the great national universities at that point, and I got a very good education in aerospace engineering, and most of my profs were World War II vets. And I ended up doing my thesis research on explosives and explosions. They became a weapon system, few air explosives, which were then used in Vietnam to clear helicopter landing zones. And I continued along that area, and I also got into flight vehicles, rockets, and aircraft. And I became fascinated by the Soviet Union because at that time they were beginning to explore space, and they had also done very fundamental, excellent work in explosions and explosives. And I continued along those lines. Then I started to notice that we had Chinese arriving on campus about 1979. They were brought by Jimmy Carter and Frank Press, his science advisor, on humanitarian grounds because China had just gone through the Great Leap Forward and Cultural Revolution, and they were literally on the verge of collapse of the offer-type situation, and we were asked to save them instead of putting a billion refugees on the world. You know, could we do something? And for about a decade, 80 to 90, I had a variety of Chinese visitors who were going to prevent coal mine explosions and rice mill explosions and things like that. But what we found out was when they went back, they went to work on military weapons systems, propulsion systems for very fast aircraft and, you know, shape charges and other things. And then I noticed that the University of Michigan, about 1985, we had a Chinese fellow who had gotten his PhD, I believe it was Wisconsin, in manufacturing. Gus Wu was his name. And he started to bring in large numbers of Chinese in manufacturing technology. And, you know, if you're going to become a superpower, you basically have to make things. Start off with nuts and bolts and then go to motor scooters and then motorcycles and cars and things like that. So he started training a generation of Chinese in manufacturing skills. Then, of course, you know, 1990, the Soviet Union broke up, and that significantly changed the world. And I got involved back into what was now the Russian Federation, worked with them closely on some projects. And then around 2000, again, one noticed at the University of Michigan, there's a large number of Chinese here, scholars, some graduate students. But they were all studying science and engineering. It wasn't like during the Cold War with the Soviets where we had people studying English language and political science. I mean, we didn't have Soviets over here who were studying dual-use technologies like we had with the Chinese students.
And just to interrupt you, if I may, it wasn't because they wouldn't have wanted to. It's because we wouldn't have permitted it. Am I right?
Well, that's correct. And it was very interesting for me. I was going back and forth to the Soviet Union quite a bit, and in August of 91, on the Friday before the coup, along with one of my generals, General Jaquish, we were sitting in the conference room of the head of the Soviet Air Force, General Shchepalnikov, and General Jaquish presented him a rather large model of the F-22 Raptor, which had just been agreed upon, etc., and Shchepalnikov smiled, and he said he greatly appreciated it, especially since the Soviets would never have such a thing because we had prevented and denied them access to the Western technologies necessary to make such things.
Right. I remember reading something that that you wrote that said, we've often heard that we spent the Soviets into collapse, that we just outspent them. You made, I think, an even more telling point that we out-technologied them. We developed technology that we kept them from getting, and they couldn't catch up on that front. Is that the way you remember it or see it?
Sure, that's right. And then General Shchepalnikov went on to congratulate John on his victory and our victory in the first Gulf War, again, using technology, and he says, of course, you know, I will never have such things for my boys because, you know, you've kept us from getting this. And then, of course, you remember the very next day, that Saturday evening, Gorbachev was put under house arrest in the Crimea, and on Monday morning, you know, the general and I and the rest of our delegation to watch the tanks appear in the streets of Moscow. So yes, we treated them totally different than when we were treating the Chinese. The Soviets, for some reason, which puzzles me, were perceived as a threat. And when you look at it, we have a lot more cultural similarities with the Russians, ballet, music, poetry, etc., than we've ever had with the Chinese. So in 2000, you know, we're welcoming all these Chinese to study, basically the inner workings of our successful society.
Professor, let me ask you to define a term that you used on this when you were describing in 2000 when the University of Michigan had a large number of Chinese all studying science and engineering, but you used the term dual-use technologies. Would you please define that for our listeners?
Yeah, well, dual-use technologies means you can either make Boeing 747s or you can make F-22 fighter jets. You can use it for the civilian good, consumer, or you can use it for military.
Yeah, you can use it to find your way home with a GPS, or use it to direct a cruise missile.
Yeah, sure. GPS, you can find the local pizza joint, or you can find the local guy hiding in the foxhole. And we were allowing the Chinese access to all these goodies, both industrial technology, which can be used to make cars, but also tanks. Remember the arsenal of democracy. We converted the auto industry into a weapons industry. Okay. And then military, flat-out pure military stuff, which has no civilian application. So in 2005, you know, two significant things happened in Michigan. Mary Sue Coleman, our president, went off to China and signed lots and lots of agreements for joint programs, for us establishing a university over there, for them bringing all kinds of students over here. And in 2005, we got a Chinese national department chair as head of my department, who had come as a graduate student in 1979 to the University of Michigan and then went through various positions in America, including the nefarious company General Electric, and then various agencies and universities. And he came back. And in 2003, when we invaded Iraq, The students asked me if I would give a course in weapons because they knew that I knew about that, and some of them were going to end up in the military, and they thought it was good to learn about these things before they went over there. And normally I taught courses on rockets, jet engines, and aircraft design, military aircraft, etc. And so I started this course, and we gave it for 2 years, and the students found it very, very helpful. Well, one of the first things that this Chinese guy did when he took over our department was to cancel this course on weapons, saying that that American students didn't need to know this stuff. And you got to keep in mind, you know, the Chinese philosophy, you know, the general who wrote The Art of War and the civilization's 5,000 years old. You know, they do little incremental stuff. You remember from the Cold War, the salami game, you know, if you cut the slice thin enough, nobody notices it. Well, that's what the Chinese are up to, okay? We steal a little bit of here, a little bit there, and hopefully no one will notice. And in fact, there was a little book that's been written called The Stealth Invasion. Roger Canfield, I think, wrote it in 2000, that somebody had put a big Trojan horse in our backyard, to use Vicki Davis's writings, and no one has noticed this because, you know, the Chinese are pretty quiet, and, you know, the things they do are not quite as bombastic as the Rosenberg case, but the results of what they're doing is as deadly serious as a Rosenberg case and probably 1,000 times worse.
Right. Dr. Kaufman, briefly, just for the record, as it were, the name of the guy that was named chairman of your department back in 2005, share that with our audience, please.
His name is Wei Shi. And when he was appointed chair of our department, he also held appointments at three universities in mainland China as a professor of aeronautical engineering. And this is what perhaps when I got my first trouble, I wrote a memo to the university saying, why are you going to hire someone in a dual-use technology who has a commitment to a likely enemy in our future?
He was dual-use, too.
Oh, yeah, and his area was aerodynamics. And, you know, just about 6 months ago, they revealed this J-20 stealth fighter like our Raptor. And, you know, it has strange shapes for the tail and other things on it. And he would have been in a perfect position over the 30 years he was here to have been what we call a sleeper agent. You know, you just slowly collect. You go to this meeting and you buy this paper. You go to this meeting, you buy this paper. You download this from the Internet. And you do it a couple times a year so no one knows that this is what you're doing. And I would bet dollar to donuts that he contributed to the J-20 stealth fighter that was unveiled, you know, when Gates was over there, and apparently the military did it without Hu Jintao knowing about it. So I think he's helped them enormously. And now he's back.
And, yeah, I was just going to ask you to tell us where he is now.
Yeah, well, in last August, he defected back to the mainland. Okay, and he became a naturalized U.S. citizen, but that's not been revoked yet, and it certainly should because it was attained under fraudulent circumstances, and he told some of his friends here that, oh, he was going to come back on a regular basis to refresh his technology bucket with the latest stuff that we have in order to take back, and the university tolerates this, and you know, and when I raised the flag, like, hey, we can't allow this stuff, it wasn't tolerated under the Soviets, and when I was a participant in the Cold War and trained in the national security of the United States, you know, we wouldn't allow this stuff to last for a microsecond. But now, tragically, it's the new normal. And federal authorities know. It went back to 2006. I had some ladies from the Defense Security Agency or whatever come in to ask whether one of our American students born in Traverse City was suitable to have a security clearance. And of course, you know, he's an okay kid, right? And then I said, well, did you look in the hallway when you walked down here? What did you see? Well, they hadn't noticed what was out in the hallway, but it's full of Chinese students. And at that time, I'd started putting together a notebook on what I thought were attacks on our national security. And it was getting pretty thick, and I said, would you like a copy of this? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I copied it, got it to them, and then the next thing, I started getting visits from people in these you know, three-letter alphabet soup agencies saying, well, tell us what's going on, and that's been going on, you know, since about 2006. And so people are well aware of the critical situation we're in. And, you know, and I can give you a couple, you know, egregious moments. We had a lady over here who was studying orbits and trajectories for satellites. Well, if you go to the Internet, you can find out she's PLA, People's Liberation Army, affiliated. And she participated in the shootdown of that old Chinese weather satellite. I think it was 2007. And then she's over here studying the latest stuff. You know, we don't have any classified stuff after the Vietnam War, but we have stuff that's nearly classified. It's top-notch stuff because we want our American students to be equipped when they go out.
Right.
Okay, so she's now gone back. She's worked on another direct intercept ABM type missile, and then she was involved in this hunter-killer satellite that they just launched this year. We had another instance where Mr. Xi brought over a group of his chums from Harbin Institute of Technology, which is the military MIT in China. And he called me down to the conference room, and he says, oh, these are my friends, and we had introductions, and I took pictures of them. And they said, oh, you know about sea-launched ballistic missiles, don't you? Yes, I know something about them. And he said, well, we're interested in the details of the Trident missile. We would like to know what's the throat liner made out of and what's the heat transfer to the throat. Can you tell us details about the casing and what's the combustion pressure, et cetera? And I guess I kind of lost my temper and told him to drop dead.
Good for you.
And then I made a right phone call to the dean. And he said, oh, you don't understand. These are our friends. This is our future.
If you work for Lockheed Martin, we'll you can't learn that
deal.
Stuff.
He says, you know, so you can understand the Chinese better, why don't you go over there for a year and teach your course on weapons and jet engines and rockets and stuff, and we'll double your salary, we'll get you a maid and a housekeeper, a driver, you'll live in a walled compound, and you'll really have a thorough understanding of China when you come back. Well, I had spent 40 days there in 1987 before Tiananmen Square, so I had some idea. And I politely told him, no. Hell no. Well, that upset the apple cart, I guess, and then they started trying to get rid of me, like, oh, we're going to revoke your tenure. I gave a paper at Iowa State University on what was going on at the University of Michigan, and that was picked up by Manufacturing Technology News. And after Mary Sue Coleman saw that, she put my office in boxes and put it in a broom closet across campus and decided that, you know, she would actively make my life miserable. And, prevent me from educating American students if I wouldn't, you know, make her the deal and educate Chinese students at the same time.
Professor, what is the law? You're talking about sharing technology, and these people felt comfortable enough to ask you about specific details on the Trident missiles. What is the law about dual-use technology in China?
Well, there's a lot of laws. ITAR, Munitions Control Act, and then some other things that I'd have to go to Google and find out. But, you know, basically the law is not being enforced as it was with the Soviets.
Exactly.
Well, isn't it true there's a law against doing this, and or it names specifically China.
Or as it's enforced against Americans. It would be very difficult for an American to learn the answers to those questions you just posed about the Trident.
Yeah, and you know, what's going on? I mean, several things are relevant to this. With regard to ITAR, the university sent out an email, and I have a copy of it, that said, you can come to a seminar, and we'll tell you how to avoid ITAR. And we have the presentation. Okay, here's a university lawyer saying, all right, here's how you get around ITAR. Okay.
Can you define ITAR for our listeners?
International Trade and Arms Regulations, okay? And then recently I had a national security guy tell me that he says, you know, it's pretty grim. You remember Wenho Lee at Los Alamos who stole the warhead for the Trident missile?
Yes.
The Mark 88, W-88 warhead, which is 200 kilotons, hydrogen device.
Yes.
Well, you know, he was never He was never prosecuted. And the government ended up paying that guy a settlement. So I had this national security guy tell me, well, you know, the Chinese and American corporations have smarter lawyers than we do, so it's difficult to prosecute these guys. Okay.
That's the music. So you're going to have to hold that thought, Professor Kaufman, on the prosecuting these guys on ITAR. Through the bottom of the hour, we're going to ask our listeners to please stick around. This is America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Our guest is Professor William Kaufman. We'll be right back.
Do you need to promote your business on the Internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to Internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Canyon State Wireless is your hands-on source for design, sales, service, and installation of the best land mobile two-way radio systems. Check us out on the web at canyonstatewireless.com or call us for specific information at 866-458-4772, 866-458-4772. Canyon State Wireless. When you're serious about communication.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt, and we're privileged to have as our guest today Professor William Kaufman of the University, retired from the University of Michigan, aerospace engineering professor of explosive devices, and has been telling how he started with the University of Michigan and how he ended with the University of Michigan by questioning their involvement with the Chinese. And when he did question that, his things were boxed up and put into a closet, and that's where
we were left. A broom closet.
A broom closet. And this is in late 2005. And the president of the university is Mary Sue Coleman. That's correct?
Yeah, man.
All right. And yeah. Coleman. All right.
Coleman. Yeah, Mary Sue Coleman. She came from the University of Iowa and had been at Research Triangle Park in the interim, and she's in the life sciences.
She's in the life sciences, and she is a professor. All right, and when we left off, the first half, you were describing something that somebody who, in the normal course of events, would have been charged with treason, but somebody said no, they had better lawyers. The Chinese offered better lawyers, and so secrets that would normally have been restricted to access to the Soviet Union was given freely to the Chinese, and nothing could be done about it. So that's where we left off. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the other thing that comes up in the modern world, the transition from the lab to the battlefield can be in the terms of months or even weeks. So something is developed very quickly, and then it's deployed. A good example of that, we found that the Humvee was very vulnerable to improvised explosive devices. So we came out with these MRAP vehicles. Now, it took about 18 months till we got them on the battlefield. So you don't have this long period like with the atomic bomb that it took a decade, literally, of development until we had a weapon system. So the time that it takes. And then the other thing, basic research frequently becomes weapons. And there's almost no controls on basic research as far as access by foreigners to it. So that has changed. Then another thing that has changed is the USB port on a computer. You know, you used to have to box up things and make microfiches and whatever to transfer the technology. And now you can just copy it on a thumb drive. You can send it overnight in an email attachment. So you can transfer enormous amounts of important information, you know, in the blink of an eye. And this brings up one device that was apparently stolen from the University of Michigan that should have a very high profile and should have been prosecuted by now, and that's not the case. And that is the current governor of the state of Michigan, Governor Rick Snyder, was a venture capitalist. His firm was called Audesta Capital. And in 2002, he invested or got interested in some DARPA-funded research at the University of Michigan, where the professor was a Vietnamese and the graduate student was a Chinese. And they're called MEMS, microelectromechanical systems. And basically, you can put these little widgets on semiconductor chips, and they can do all kinds of amazing things. Well, this thing that he was particularly interested in is kind of like an oscillator in a quartz watch, except it's much better. And basically, it ends up as part of the guidance system for smart bombs, or what are really called precision-guided munitions. And that has been the case here in the United States, where Tyco Corporation has made up these guidance systems for artillery shells and smart bombs and all these kind of stuff. And it's getting down to the point where they think they can put it in a 50-caliber machine gun round now. But it looks like he has exported this technology to China through a firm called Dicera, which is located in San Jose and also in China. And this came up during the election of 2010. The Virgil Bonero, who was his opponent for governor, said, "Hey, Mr. Governor candidate, it looks like you've exported technology here, and everything that we've been able to find on the websites would indicate that that's the case." And he's been asked about it, and he's basically stonewalling. So we filed a complaint with the Bureau of Industrial Security, the Department of Commerce. And these are supposed to be the cops who watch that we do not inadvertently export our technology. But that was softened a bit because you used to have to go to the State Department, and they were pretty strict about it. But, you know, the people over in Commerce, recently we've had people with clear association with China's secretary or sympathetic to China. And they, you know, they want to develop business with China. So it looks like this stuff has been exported. We filed a complaint the end of October last year, like, where's the licensing for this, through the Chicago office of BIS. The local one of the local TV stations, Channel 7, WXYZ in Detroit, they filed a FOIA to get his export permit. And again, there's this total sandbagging coming out of the Department of Commerce. You know, it's right up there with the birth certificate issue. And where is your export certificate? Well, nobody wants to say. And really, I think there's a great cover-up going on, okay, to defend what this governor of Michigan did. And I hope if you run into him out in Salt Lake City, you ask him, you know, where's your export certificate? But this might be the poster child of what's going on, except it's going on, you know, probably 100 times each week.
Send me his picture. Will you do that? Send me a good picture of him so I'll know who to look for when I'm out in Salt Lake City.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, we've made up this header for our website, and which we hope to turn into a billboard that we're going to put up right before the governor's conference. Because, you know, getting all this stuff out through the establishment press is really tough. And it's people like you and your colleagues on the Internet and guerrilla radio and whatever, talk radio, who are throwing this stuff out in the open because the establishment press has, you know, an interest in not putting it out. And on our website header, there's a picture of our governor very close to Mary Sue Coleman when she gave him an honorary degree at the last commencement.
Would you give us the website address? Give everybody the website address.
www.china, C-H-I-N-A, hyphen, threat, T-H-R-E-A-T, .com. And our email, where you can send us questions and comments, is China Espionage, all one word, or excuse me, Chinese, C-H-I-N-E-S-E, E-S-P-I-O-N-A-G-E, @gmail.com.
Well, you're not hiding anything there. Chinese espionage @gmail.com.
Correct, correct. And people can send us comments and questions, etc. But there's a good picture of Snyder on the top of our website.
I'm looking at that right now.
At our expense.
A nice white-haired gentleman. I'm going to look for him specifically.
But he's a businessman. And, you know, we're running into this, you know, new America, where the business people will sell our nation.
You mentioned,
and apparently it doesn't bother them.
It doesn't bother them. I'm going to tell you of a couple of other events. One is June 2011 in Beijing and Shanghai, China. There was a special conference called Next Stop America, big exclamation point. It was a conference. It was aimed at Chinese chief executive officers, Chinese CEOs, and it was a 2 or 3 day conference giving them the how-tos toolkit on how to invest and buy up residential and commercial real estate in the United States. Kind of like there's a fire sale here, and this is your instruction how to do it. One of the sessions, the breakout sessions, was getting tax credits and on government tax incentives, as it was called, and governmental relations. So it was telling you how to develop those. That was in June. What's coming up in July are these two conferences right across the street from each other, both dealing with Chinese and pairing the people up with business or party officials. One is sponsored by the National Governors Association, which is the U.S.-China Governors Forum. And then directly, that's at the Five Star Hotel, by the way, which you're paying for. And then across the street is the U.S.-China 2011 Trade and Cultural Conference. Both of those proclaim, only one of them has a published agenda, and that's the one that's open to the public, is going to have pairing up with Americans and Chinese either businessmen or party officials. So June in China, July in Salt Lake City, and then in September, the State Chambers of Commerce, and I got this message from Oklahoma's State Chamber of Commerce, that to save the date, in September, they're all going to Washington, D.C., and that they're going to discuss, quote-unquote, the title of the program is The New Realities. So we can kind of anticipate what the new realities are going to be, right?
Well, that's very fascinating that you mentioned that, because on the 12th of May, a couple of us went to Capitol Hill for the day. And we only visited congressmen and senators that we knew were true patriots, that they were sympathetic to American interests. Representative Wolf of Virginia, for example, Representative Forbes of Virginia, Marcy Kaptur of Ohio, John McCain, John Kerry. And we met with these people and their staff, and we told them what was going on at the University of Michigan, that we'd be invaded by these Chinese spies. And they said, well, let us tell you what's happening to us. Every time that we support legislation or pass legislation to advance America, to promote American products, to promote American workers, we get dozens and dozens of calls from the White House, from cabinet secretaries, telling us, quit bashing China. China is our friends. Don't you get this? And then the second thing that we heard, generally speaking, from all these offices was, the U.S. government is infiltrated at the highest levels by Chinese moles, and that they have been there since 1948. And they are pushing the Chinese agenda internally in our government. And one of the moles they spoke openly was Elaine Chao, who had been Secretary of Labor under Bush. And also, she's the wife of a prominent senator. And it was alleged that her grandfather fought with Chairman Mao in the Chinese Revolution. And they said, well, just go to Google and put in. You can find everything. And they said there's dozens and dozens of others that are not in the open. And they said, please go home and find real American patriots who will support us to take America back for Americans, that we're really getting beat up here.
If China is our friend, as the White House is telling the legislature, the Congress, then why did they ship over thousands of defective RFID tags to the military?
Well, that's true. And you know, it's interesting how that's been recently discovered. And the other thing that I think we have to think about and seek our friends' help is, if I were Hu Jintao, what would I be doing? I would be funding Islamic terrorists.
Absolutely.
Because this is the most effective use that I can make of my military dollar. I don't have to put carrier battle groups at sea. I don't have to put Trident ballistic missile submarines at sea. I'll just fund a jihadist to go to America and do damage to them. And our national security people will openly admit that their first priority is the terrorist. Their second priority is the Chinese communist.
Given your expertise and travels, I think it's probably true to say that most Americans understood that Russia was a potential threat, at least militarily, and yet they tend to not see China as a threat. I think I've often heard people say, well, China is not expansionistic. We don't have to worry about them. Tell us what you know about China's expansionism and involvement in Africa, for example.
Well, they're raping the continent for their natural resources. In order to do that, they want to build a highway across the Serengeti. Wildlife experts tell you that the elephant is going to be extinct within a decade because the Chinese are poaching the elephant for its tusk while they're in Africa. So they're just doing horrible things there. And then, well, you can ask a Tibetan, what do you think about the marvelous Chinese taking care of you? Well, we're going to eliminate the Tibetan language from the school. We're going to import millions of Chinese into your land, and pretty soon, you know, you're going to be the past. If you're a Uyghur, you guys are next. You know, we'll openly shoot you in the streets of your capital. And if you're an Inner Mongolian, well, that's already over and done with because we've already taken you over. And one of the first things that people run into in America when they express concern about China is you're accused of being a racist and not liking the Chinese. Well, please excuse me. I mean, did anybody ask the Tibetans their opinion, or the Uyghurs, or the Inner Mongolians when you speak about racist? I mean, the Chinese are right at the top of the pile as far as I can see. So, but all this isn't getting up. Panda bear is the image that's being promoted, not the fire-breathing dragon. And anybody who recalls any of ancient Chinese history Well, the Mongol hordes came out of the east numerous times and made it to Poland, for example.
That's right.
Where they pillaged villages, etc. So our leadership doesn't understand and is concealing, and or is concealing, the problem.
I think they do understand, though, don't you, Professor Kaufman, in that there's one person that's been a continuing presence since the late 60s up to present day, and that's Henry Kissinger. And he has been quite instrumental in making sure that there is an open relationship and a building interdependency with both the Soviet Union and the Communist Chinese. So wouldn't you say that that's... he was the one that caused this doorway to open and for these technology secrets to be transferred to China.
Well, that's certainly correct. And people and corporations are making fortunes off of this. I mean, when I say to myself, why is the University of Michigan doing this? Because they've become very rich. Their endowment, even during these troubled economic times, has increased by 25% a year. It's $8.5 billion. You look at the salaries of the executives at the University of Michigan, it's millions. And then you look at our Board of Regents, which is supposedly to control what's going on. All of them, except one, seven of the eight, are corporate lawyers from Detroit who have clients who are doing businesses, who are doing business in China, and one of the regents is a vice president for Delta Airlines. And you look at the steadily increasing number of flights between Detroit and Beijing. They're filling these flights with Chinese coming to America, to come to the University of Michigan, to do business. And corporate America and corporate executives are making fortunes.
Given
at the expense of the American people.
Of the Fortune 500, for example, just off the top of your head, Professor, how many of the Fortune 500 companies in the U.S. on the Dow Jones would you say are already engaged in a major presence and probably partnerships with Chinese companies?
I would say about 99%.
That's what I thought, too.
And they say to you, well, I mean, look, we have Ford and General Motors here. That's just down the road. All right? Well... So we save General Motors with TARP, and General Motors says their future's in China. They're going to sell more cars in China. And what did General Motors do? It just made this 90th anniversary film for the history of the Communist Party in China, okay, to help out our friends over there. So and General Electric. General Electric, they have a division in Grand Rapids here where they make advanced avionics for aircraft. And they say, well, civilian electronics are different than military electronics. That's a lie. They're the same. Okay, and we're exporting top-of-the-line avionics to the Chinese from the General Electric plant in Grand Rapids. General Electric's exporting top-of-the-line engines from Evendale to China. And these engines, oh, they're for the airplane that's going to compete with the 737 A320 look-alike. But at the core of that engine is military engine technology.
You bet.
And it's alleged that, yes, certain politicians on certain sensitive committees are being politically supported by General Electric.
Exactly.
But of course, under the new Supreme Court ruling, you can't quite tell that. But, you know.
There are ways.
Our governors are being persuaded and are buying into this. Not all of them. Governor Kasich from Ohio has... decided not to renew his membership in the National Governors Association, and he has issued a statement that he will not be attending the July National Governors Forum with the Chinese. Their annual membership dues in the National Governors Association was $176,000. The states are facing budget shortfalls, yet this is one high-flying organization, and their intent is to not only reinvent state government, but to seek foreign direct investment in their states.
We need to use John's example to start a groundswell to convince other governors to pull out of that organization as well.
No, they'll only respond to political heat, not for moral persuasion.
Obviously.
On Professor...
Well, he ought to be commended. You're right.
He is to be commended, but the question I was looking at is, like, why Michigan... What is so significant about Michigan? You've gone through the history that the University of Michigan has a long history with relations or some sort of a relationship with China through different decades. But also strategically, that is the home of the busiest port in the United States, the busiest bridge, and has quite an interesting dependency or relationship with Canada. And the Canadians have vested interest with both China for trade and also with Russia because they are a pass-through country also, and they're looking for investment. They're looking for population. I think you mentioned in one of our conversations that they're not replacing themselves as a country. Their birth rate is 1.8. So the what role is Canada playing in this deepening relationship with both the USSR and with China?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head, and you are aware of the report that I brought your attention this week. Canada's gateways connecting Canada to global opportunities.
Yes,
and I would urge every one of your listeners to download that from the internet, and you can put it on your website, and it's on our website. But basically, it shows that Mexico is being replaced, and China is going to supply us with imports from the world. There's several very significant figures in there which show arrows coming from China, arrows coming from Europe, going into Canada, connecting to the Trans-Canada Highway and Railway with intermediate transshipment points at Winnipeg and Windsor, and then all the arrows go south. And the United States is going to receive apparently everything from the world, and we aren't going to do anything anymore. And also, it's been noted that our agricultural exports, which we still try to send out, and some other things, that we can no longer export these through the Atlantic, Gulf, and Pacific ports, which are clogged with Chinese junk. And all our American people have to go north through Canada, through Windsor, in order to access the world through Prince Rupert, British Columbia, in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And this is extremely dangerous. It brings in Sinomac. It brings in these inland ports or free trade zones. And we had a delegation here recently in Michigan looking us over, as did the state of Ohio, but that was before Kasich was elected, and the state of Pennsylvania. So the Idaho phenomenon apparently is going to move elsewhere, and we're going to have your friendly Chinese industries literally, internally, taking care of all our consumer needs, and who knows what our trade deficit will be in these coming days.
Infinite.
You know, I attended through the years, starting in about 2005 or 6, started attending periodically NASCO conventions, which is North America Super Corridor Coalition conferences, and they would have an annual conference. They're a multinational consortium, international group that tries to promote the I-35 corridor and the connectors. At those conferences, their membership goes from Canada, the United States, down to Mexico. Who was normally present at those and had a key speaking position would be somebody from TransCanada, which is the rail line, but also somebody from the Windsor Bridge, that one, because that's the busiest bridge. And so what they were doing was developing relationships between business and trade organizations, business and the supply chain tracking technology developed by Lockheed Martin to make it easier for goods to move without having the containers opened or stop at any borders or any ports. From stuffing the container, as they said, in China, it would sail the seven seas or the oceans, come in through these ports on the western side of Mexico, and now it's the western side of Canada, and without stopping, be offloaded at multimodal hubs, foreign trade zones, but multimodal hubs, be put on a truck or on a train and pass right through all the borders. The borders don't exist under their scenarios. And your diagrams that you sent was very reminiscent of the same diagrams that were presented at these NASCO meetings. When you were talking about, you know, the other thing that's pending, growing activity that's going on right now between the United States and Canada is this Keystone XL pipeline, which is the tar sands And again, that involves several states, I think it's 10 states in the United States, to bring tar sands development, which the Chinese are invested in.
That's right.
This oil development all the way through the middle of the United States, 10 counties in Oklahoma, by the way.
To the refineries.
To the refineries in Houston. Well, who's investing in that? The Chinese. And they're partnering with the Canadians. So we've got, we're being assaulted from all directions here, and our governors are playing a key role in facilitating this assault, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and when I met with these national security people recently, they showed a bit of surprise because they said, well, you know, we're always trained, it's our southern border that's the danger, but while we've been obsessed with the southern border, our friends, our long-term friends to the north, have been changing, and now we have to address similar security concerns on the northern border.
Well, we still have southern border concerns.
We're not really prepared to do this.
We really do still have southern border concerns, but I'm kind of wondering if that's why Mexico has been allowed to descend into anarchy.
Well, it's also possible that the contentious relationship with the Mexican border problem is purposeful, to deflect attention from other, even more permanent long-term concerns like the northern border.
Yeah, shall we say that the Trojan horse coming in from the north is much better behaved.
Yeah, well said, but much more lethal.
Yes, that's true.
But we do not agree as a country normally. We do not agree as a country. Gay marriage or same-sex marriage is recognized in 9 out of the 10 provinces in Canada. And New York, as everybody knows, just passed gay marriage, homosexual marriage in the state of New York. So the blending together of the mores of these countries is happening before us, and people are not standing strong enough to rebut what is happening. The moral issue, the social issues are just as important, if not more important, because they've weakened this country to the point where we accept these what would normally be called invaders, which are not being called invaders, where a good, honest professor gets his things put in a closet when he starts to challenge what this Mary Sue Coleman is doing with what would normally be considered very high security secrets and making sure that they are shared with China. It's just an amazing thing that's happening in our lifetime.
It really is. Dr. Kaufman, I don't want to run out of time, and we got a couple more minutes left, but I want to tell you on behalf of liberty-loving citizens that we thank you for taking the position that you've taken, for shedding light on these issues. We've got a catastrophic problem of our universities training our enemies to defeat us, and one of the things that really concerns me is I come from the computer background primarily, and it is demonstrably true that the technology development and the genius, the inventions have all come from here, and the other countries are very good at copying and stealing, but they're not good at developing on their own. If we get to the point that we've turned our entire autonomy over to them, the global society pretty much grinds to a halt, doesn't it?
Yes, and I express my appreciation to you for shining some sunlight on this dark corner in our society. And I think, you know, we don't have much time left, and I hope that by the election of 2012 that we can mobilize the people who still believe in American values and get them out to vote, get them off the golf courses, get them out of the bowling alleys, you know, get them to going door to door, getting going to coffee hours of the congressmen and confronting them with the hypocrisy that's going on both at the state level and the national level.
Absolutely.
And we need a mad and educated electorate for the coming election.
Well said.
We do. We're going to give your website again. It's china-threat.com. That's china-threat, T-H-R-E-A-T.com. The way you can reach the group of people on China Threat is ChineseEspionage@gmail.com. That's ChineseEspionage@gmail.com. Thank you for spelling it correctly. We're asking our listeners to call Governor Mary Fallon at 1-800-865-5853. Our special guest today has been Professor William Kaufman, retired from the University of Michigan and a true patriot. We thank you, Professor Kaufman. We'll have to have you back again because we just ran out of time. Thank you for being our guest, and we'd like to say may God bless our listeners.